Reformed Church.
But there are many people that would think that when you, if you were to say something to Jesus that is very, you know, you were just thinking about him and how much you love him, and if you were to say something to him, even though maybe it wasn't entirely correct, that he would just kind of understand, you know, and he would just, you know, like that he would kind of respond to you like, oh, you know, like, I know your motive and I know your heart and I know that you didn't intend this to say that in a bad way. But, you know, the funny thing is, you know, when especially like, I'll read this example to you, how he rebukes, I mean, he rebukes Peter big time for what he says. And if you try to look, you know, and kind of put yourself in Peter's shoes a little bit, you kind of recognize that Peter was attempting to just, you know, he wasn't maybe just thinking about himself, but he was really thinking about Jesus and his love for him. But you really see the rebuke that Jesus gives him, because what he's talking about is his suffering, right? And when the Lord is speaking to you about his suffering and the importance of his suffering, and then in our mind we wash it out to be some other stupid thing, or like it's all, oh, like it was this or that, or like there's people that think about the suffering of Christ and all they can think about is feel sorry and feel angry towards those that did that to him, not recognizing that it was the Father that was doing that to him. You know, like it's just seeing the suffering of Christ in the wrong light. It's not okay to look at the suffering of Christ in the wrong light, no matter what the motivation is. It doesn't matter what the reasoning is. The reasoning is going to be human reasoning. That's what it's going to be. When you look at the suffering of Christ incorrectly, it's because of human reasoning and nothing else. And there's never a time where God will like understand human reasoning, right? It's wrong. It will always be wrong. Human reasoning will always be wrong, and God will always be looking to renew your mind away from human reasoning, right, into the mind of Christ, always, right? That's definitely is the Lord's point with the Spirit of God in us, to renew our mind. So in Matthew 16 and verse 21, it says, from that time, it says, 16:21, from that time Jesus began to show to his disciples that he must go to Jerusalem, right? He must. These are all definite things that had to happen, right? He must go to Jerusalem and suffer. He must go to Jerusalem and he must suffer many things from the elders and chief priests and scribes and be killed and be raised on the third day. So he began to teach them about his suffering and about the glory that would follow, right? He began to teach them about his suffering and he began to teach them about the glory that would follow. Now, that's essential, right? That's essential to the gospel. Like, if you don't understand that, you can't even be saved if you don't understand that, right? So he says that to his disciples, and then Peter takes him aside, right? And this, you know, you could attempt, I guess, to try to understand where he was coming from, but it really doesn't matter where he was coming from. He was coming from a humanistic point of view, which is wrong, right? So he says, then Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him, right? Saying, far be it for you, Lord, this shall not happened to you. But what is it that he was saying? He said, far be it that you would suffer this way. Far be it that you would die at the hands of the priests and the scribes and that you would be killed. You know, far be it for you that this suffering would happen to you, right? And he says to him in verse 23, he turned and said to Peter, get behind me, Satan, right? So he rebukes the one from which the origin of what he's saying comes from, right? Because this is not a godly thing that he's saying. It doesn't matter his motivation. What he was saying, simply put, if you look at what he was saying, what Jesus was teaching him and what he was saying, what he said was anti-Christ. What he was saying was anti-gospel. What he was saying is not according to Christ. It's not according to the plan of God. It was going contrary to what the Lord was doing. So he says, get behind me, Satan. He says, you are an offense to me. You are not, it says, for you are not mindful of the things of God. You're not mindful of the things of God, but the things of men. You're not mindful of the things of God, but the things of men. And you know what? When you think about the emphasis that God puts on his suffering, right, and the glory that followed his suffering, right, the glory that followed the cross, right? So his suffering and the glory that followed, and the emphasis, therefore, that the Lord puts on it, and the emphasis that we have put on this church on the exact same thing. Look at how Jesus rebukes one of his own disciples, right? He wasn't just rebuking any old person. He's rebuking the disciples that had been with him. Peter had been with him for 3 years, right? Listening, hearing him, right? And he says, get behind me, Satan. You're an offense to me. You're not mindful of the things of God, but you're mindful of the things of men. So is it important to correct? How important is it to correct even one another here, right? When we're thinking wrong, when we're not thinking correctly about the suffering of Christ, we that have been learning and growing with the Lord in this thing, how much more is it important to correct any person that would ever say anything against what? Against the suffering of Christ and the glory that followed, right? It's not, it should never be fine for us to speak about things as though Christ had never suffered and did what he did. And there's many things, many ways in which we speak and many ways in which we think today that should be and do get rebuked and corrected by the Lord in our mind if we let him, right? If we listen, he'll rebuke and he'll correct those things, and we need them to be corrected, right? That it's an awful way to think. To live in a way and speak in a way that discounts completely his suffering and what he did, that's a horrible way to live. I mean, that's the way the world lives because they don't know any better, right? But we that have learned and continue to grow, right, you want that. Like, you want someone to correct your way of thinking. You want the Lord to rise up in your mind big, right, and correct, and for bells to go off and whistles to go off and like, oh, my gosh, like, what was I thinking? What was I saying, right? But you see, you know, when I just saw that, it's like, Lord, my God, like if you see a staple teaching in this church that has caused so much offense, right, has been the constant emphasis on the suffering of Christ and the glory that follows. So most people would listen to that and say, well, yeah, but I've never been against anything that your church has taught about how Jesus came to suffer. Yeah, but you are against the other half of it, right? If you're not against the suffering, then you should not be against the result of his suffering. The result of his suffering was his glory, right? I mean, it's like being against the fact that Jesus suffered and then was raised from the dead. Are you against the fact that Jesus was raised from the dead? Oh, of course not. But you're against the fact of the same glory that he was raised with, that we have obviously and without dispute have been raised by the exact same glory he was raised from. Like, but you're against that, right? And the same people with, you know, with, oh, you've taken it too far. Listen, if you can't take too far, right, the glory that Jesus has today, how can you take too far the glory that we possess today? And that sort of teaching is that which should be rebuked. And you know what? If Peter would have been bent out of shape by the way that Jesus spoke to him, and he would have gotten up and left Jesus and never followed him again, who would have been wrong? Peter would have been wrong. He would have been dead wrong to do that, right? And the loss would have been Peter's, right? The one that would have turned his back on the gospel would have been Peter. It's just, you know, it's such a simple little couple verses, but it is such an important thing, right? The suffering of Christ and the glory that followed. And you can look at that so many different ways and spin it different ways to say that, you know, I mean, there are people that can look at Jesus suffering and just honestly just feel bad because of everything that he had to go through. But honestly, you know how interesting it is to get to a point in your life where we have come that you rejoice in his suffering. You know why? Because if not for his suffering, we would not have the life that we have. If not for his suffering, we would have nothing that we have. If not for his suffering, we would still be dead in our sins. If not for his suffering, we would have nothing of what we have. We should be rejoicing in what he's done. And it's the only way to look at his suffering. Rejoicing from what he accomplished for us. And obviously, and he didn't leave it out, and we should never leave it out, right? The suffering of Christ and the glory that followed, right? But just good, right, to remember what we have, to know, you know what, it's the things that happen to you in this world. Even, you know, let's say, you know, if you get sick, you don't feel well, right? Don't look at what's going on in your life as though he did nothing, right? Don't look at it like everybody else looks at it, right? Like, oh, like I got sick. Oh, everybody's getting sick. Oh, that's a great way to look at it. You got sick, everybody else is getting sick. What an awesome way for a Christian who has been bought by the blood of Jesus Christ. That's an awesome way for you to look at what just happened to you. What just happened to you is the same thing that happens to everybody else. So what the heck is the purpose of you even being saved? What's the purpose of having the glory of God in you? What's the purpose of him having done everything that he did if everything that happens to you is the same thing that happens to everybody else? You begin to read. I read probably like, I don't know, like a couple days ago, just the first 8 chapters of Ecclesiastes. And you know, it's an interesting thing. When you begin to read Ecclesiastes, you see, you know what? It is the same. The same empty profitableness. It is the same for people that are in the world. It don't matter whether you're rich or poor. It is the same. It is all profitless and amounts to nothing. Don't matter what you got. Don't matter whether you live under a bridge or whether you live in a mansion. You're going to end up in the same place with the same suffering. You end up all the same, all in death. That So people that live in the world that are not seeking the Lord and don't care what he's done, right, they can live that way and they can think that way. There's no difference, right? Sickness is going to hit the poor or the rich. Death comes for both of them, right? But for a born-again believer to think that I have to think and act and react the exact same way, it's not about what's happening to you. It's how do you think, right? It's not about what's going on with you. The way that you think is what's going to fix what's going on with you, right? It's when you think in a way that discounts what he's saying, we need to be so rebuked in our mind. And if you get bent out of shape because somebody rebukes you, then get bent out of shape then, right? But thank God Peter knew enough. He didn't know everything, but he knew enough to keep his mouth shut and listen to what the Lord was telling him. That is a sign of a maturing individual, right? That when the Lord rebukes you, just take it and learn from it, right? And that's a sign of maturity, right, in our church, that there are so many things that the Lord has corrected throughout the years. Let him keep correcting them. Let him just keep correcting them. Let him keep destroying old ways of thinking and replacing it with a new way to think, right? It is not the same. We may go through similar things than people go to, but it's just, I mean, me and Pastor Mike were just in passing just talking about it, and I had just been reading so much of Ecclesiastes, and we just happened to mention that, you know, like it's not the same thing. The things that we go through is not the same, right? Solomon would never, and the Lord for that matter, obviously, would never have compared his children to the world and say there's no difference, right? This is a cool thing to understand. You know what? You're not like animals, right? You're not like just earthly things that are here and then die and pass away, right? It's so different. And the more and more that you allow the Lord to teach you, the more and more that you'll see how different you are. You may look like another individual, right? But you sure as heck, you're not made like another individual is, right? We have the glory of God on the inside of it. Good stuff to remember.
We hope you enjoyed this message from Reformed Church. If you have, please share this with someone else and help us get this unpopular message to the world. If you'd like to support Reformed Church, you can do so at reforminus.com/give. Also on our website, you can take advantage of our free messages, articles, and even full discipleship courses. Start reforming your mind now at reforminus.com.